Hey.
Sorry, I'm late. I apologize for that.
Nah, it's okay. Hey, Phil. What's up, man? How's everything?
It's a busy day at work, but yeah, and I was sitting in my last meeting. I'm like, come on, I gotta go. I got Gamertag Radio. 1,000 episodes. That's awesome.
Yeah, thanks, man. Thanks. Well, let's record this. I know you have another one after this, man. So
it's like a slammed right now.
So we're set.
Ladies and gentlemen, podcasting since 2005. You're listening to Gamertag Radio with your host, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
All right, welcome to Gamertag Radio, episode 1,000. Can you believe this, guys? After 15 years, we finally reached 1,000 episodes. Insane. So this is your host, Danny, and joining me this week for this special, special, historic episode, I have here co-host of the show, Paris Lilly. Paris, what's going on, man?
What is going on, man? And like I've told you a million times, thank you for allowing me to be a part of this and getting to episode 1,000. You know, I wasn't here as a host from day one, but I was here as a listener from the beginning, and just all your mentorship and friendship over the years, and eventually joining GTR myself in 2013 and being a part of this. Just thank you, man. This is a hell of an accomplishment for you, and I'm very proud of you.
Yeah, thanks, man. And also thank you to all the listeners that have been listening to GTR throughout the years. You know, some people went away, some people come back, and some of them just was there the whole time, man, nonstop listening to every episode, man. So thank you so much. Also, thank you to former GTR crew members. Also, Pete, man, I wish Pete was on this episode, but hey, scheduling was going to be really hard. So, but he's going to be joining us in the future, man, you know, all the way from Europe. Thank you to every single gaming company that's been hitting us up throughout the years, man, to just giving us opportunity on anything, just getting even a press release, inviting us to events, getting a game, and letting us do an interviews with the developers, producers, execs. Like, thank you so much, man, because I've never thought in a million years, when I started this podcast, I've never thought that we were going to go traveling to like different studios around the world just to talk about games and just record it on a podcast, man. So that's been an amazing, amazing moment, man. So, and anything else, Paris, before we talk a little bit about Phil?
About no, that? No, again, just an amazing accomplishment, man. Episode 1,000, and obviously our special guest on this episode, it's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. So let me mention this title, because I want to make this right. The Executive Vice President of Gaming at Microsoft. So I want to say this. We had Phil back in 2014 during E3. They actually contacted us back then, Microsoft, and they gave us this opportunity. So ever since then, I'm like, hey, you know what? Let me try to get Phil again. You know, so throughout the years, and just scheduling, it was just really, really tough. So they had to decline, you know. So I got to give props to Paris, because I hit up Paris like months ago last year. I was like, Paris, episode 1,000 is coming up. I don't know what to do. Should we just do a regular episode? Should we do something special? And Paris said this. He was like, look, Danny, you started GTR as an Xbox podcast back in the days. I think it's the perfect time to have Phil. I was like, man, are you sure? Because they've been declining every single time. You know, every time I send a request, he's like, dude, you know what? Try one more time. It doesn't hurt to try. And I did it back last year. It was like around September, around the end of September or so. And we finally got to hear back just recently, man, a couple weeks ago. And especially seeing that tweet from Phil. He tweeted that from Japan when he was there for a business trip. That was just amazing. 2 o'clock in the morning. I'll never forget that. I had my phone next to me, and my phone was just buzzing the whole time. Ding, 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 ding. So it's amazing to get this opportunity, man. You know, and I hope this, you know, inspire a lot of people that, you know, you never know what could happen. You never know who's listening. You never know the opportunity you would get in the future, man, if you just keep on working hard and just not giving up. And at the same time, the most important thing is just being fair and being respectful to everybody, you know. So before I play this this interview, Paris, you want to say anything about that? And then we'll play Phil. I know that was a very long thing.
No, I mean, I think people don't want to hear from us. They actually want to hear from Phil Spencer at this point. So, let's play that interview and then we can wrap it up afterwards.
Yeah, definitely. So we'll be right back after this. Enjoy this historic interview. Here goes.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio. This is a Gamertag Radio exclusive.
All right, so we have the executive vice president of gaming, Microsoft. We have Phil Spencer here, man. Phil, what's going on, man? Welcome to the show.
Not a lot. Busy day. Executive vice president. You don't use my title like that. I just editing. It's all corporate now.
Oh, it's all corporate. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because we had you back in 2014. Great conversation, by the way. And I think that was like the beginning of like major changes for the company, man. So, but actually, it was 2016, right, Paris? That's when we were like, wait a minute, something is up with Microsoft, man. So Paris got invited to one of your events at that time. So Paris, you want to go from there? We'll talk about it.
Yeah, I'll just jump right into it. So Phil, again, thank you for taking few minutes to talk to us. And yeah, at 2016, I went to that spring showcase in San Francisco. And I remember you gave a speech during that, like a keynote or however, to kick off the event.
I remember
and that was, in my view, that was the start of everything to where we are today, because that was kind of, I remember Quantum Break was there and it was, oh, Quantum Break's going to be on the PC. And then I remember at E3 that year, that's when we got Xbox Play Anywhere. And then you said something very key at the end. You said, no one gets left behind. And I remember, and I went back and watched it to make sure. I know you were talking more about the Xbox One at the time, but here we are. You know, you've announced the Series X at the Game Awards, and we'll get into that in a few minutes. But people will kill me if I don't start off the conversation this way, just to get it out of the way. So we know Matt Booty; he had the interview a few weeks ago, with the UK magazine, and you announced that at least for the first year of the Series X, you're not going to have exclusive titles. Those same titles will also be a part of the Xbox One family. Now, we get a lot of feedback, and a lot of the feedback I personally got excited about. I was like, great, this is choice. This is great for the consumer. Let's see what this is going to be. But then we've got feedback where people have said, wait a minute, you're taking away my excitement for a new hardware launch, for a new console launch. And you would look at a game like Halo Infinite, which in my opinion is probably the most important game you've made in the history of Xbox. Not to mention this is the most important year in the history of Xbox, but people are saying, well, what's my incentive now to go buy a Series X? Why are you making this change to not have Halo Infinite and all the other titles that you'll have this holiday exclusive to the platform? So I know that was very long-winded, but I wanted to make sure I got it out of the way. But can you kind of explain your approach and philosophy going into this next generation of gaming?
Yeah, sure. And first, I mean, good. You accurately picked up at that showcase in 2016. I know I kind of confused some people, even some people on my own team, but I had a view that we had been working as a leadership team on where we were going to be going. And I thought it was important to stand up and at least try to give some kind of roadmap so that people, as things were coming into place, as we had announced new things, that people could kind of say, oh, okay, well, I understand how this fits in a vision that from our perspective is a vision putting the player at the center and not putting the device at the center. And today people play games on a ton of different devices. And that is something that has really led to gaming's growth. I mean, it's almost a cliche now. I say it so often. There are over 2 billion people who play video games. That number is expected to grow to 4 billion in the next decade. It's growth for our industry, which leads to some of the best creations that we've ever seen, because creators are finding new customers, new gamers are coming in all the time. And I think our job as a platform is to create the broadest platform for gamers so they can find the broadest set of games that they could go play, so they can find great games that they want to go play by themselves or go play great games with their friends. That was my long-winded side. But So what we're trying to do is put the player at the center and say, if you're a gamer and you want to go play the highest fidelity experiences on your television or on your PC, we want to give you the ability to do that. If you're somebody who is playing games and you're never going to own a console, you're never going to own a gaming PC, we're obviously investing in xCloud and things to make that possible so that you can play games on those devices, even business models, because not everybody can afford to go out and spend $60 on a new game. People want to play more games. So you look at something like Game Pass is really an evolution of the business model of games so that it gives people another option to build a library of games that they can go play. Now, specifically on exclusives or non-exclusives, I mean, one of the benefits that we have just sitting inside of Microsoft is we've obviously been close to the development of what's been going on PC for years.
Right.
And I think today, if we look at the PC ecosystem, we'd see some of the best, most highest fidelity games anywhere sitting on high-end gaming PCs. And some of those same games are actually able to run on PCs that are a few years old that have much less capability. And the state of engines and capability today means that developers have the capability to take full use of the gaming hardware that's in front of them. Obviously, when we built our strategy with Series X, we started with that in mind. If we wanted to go build a gaming console that was going to be the absolute best that we could deliver on a television and deliver unique capability to creators that they could use to go create the best games. Mm-hmm. But you don't want to do that to the exclusion of everybody else. And you also want to do that hand in hand with developers, because developers want to find the widest audience possible at the same time. And yes, there are always trade-offs in what you're going to do from developing each individual game. And I'm not going to go dictate to every studio, every third-party studio, kind of what they have to go support. But what we see in today's world is gamers want to play games with their friends, regardless of what device those friends are on. People want to have the largest selection of games open to them, and developers want to be able to make use of absolutely the best in the technology that's available. And we built this plan with all of three of those as inputs, and we feel really good about where we are.
Boom. Now, my question is, you know, I'm usually used to Xbox having like their own reveal event, you know, right before E3. Why was it important for you guys to reveal Xbox Series X at the Video Game Awards? Because I think we never seen that before in the industry. Why the change?
Yeah, you know, that, I love that. We made the decision. The decision was actually really pushed forward by one of our marketing leads, and she's awesome. And she just stood up in a room and she said, "We should go do something bold. Something we've never done before. Let's face it, we're not in the market position we wanted to be in this last generation. I don't think we're going to get to disrupt and grow our business just doing what we've always done. Let's go try to do new things." And when she first brought the idea up to me, and I talked with Major about this a little bit on his podcast, you know, mm-hmm. Honestly, I wasn't the biggest fan. I was like, well, there's going to be a lot of other games there, and we've never launched an Xbox in a way that was going to work. But it was, yeah. You know, Jeff has done a really good job building a great platform in the Game Awards that gets tens of millions of viewers, and it's global. And we said, let's go do it. The thing that really made it work, though, I thought was the work that the team did around the videos, the video assets that we had. And I'd say both for Hellblade and for Series X. I thought both of them back-to-back really, really played well. And it was cool to do it. And it was, I think the response has been great. But to be completely honest with you, I could be sitting here today and it could have been a disaster. Right? You have to make those decisions. Mm-hmm. And you make them without all the knowledge of how is it going to play out. I like trying something bold. I'm really happy with the way the way it played out and the response from the fans. But every decision we make between now and launch, you know, we're trying to think about things in a different way. And some of them will get right and some of them we won't, but we're definitely not going to be meek. Like, we're going to be bold in what we're trying to go do.
Yeah. And I was very surprised when you guys showed Hellblade 2. I was like, oh my God, what? Now, my question about that, like, why show that game too, you know? So, but you were going to say something, Paris, too, about that?
Well, I actually wanted to kind of play off of that, of what you were just talking about, because I was at the Game Awards when you did that announcement.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. And, And I remember we're sitting in the crowd and I'm looking up. I'm like, okay, what is Phil going to show? What is it going to be? Cuphead 2 or something? Like, I really had zero expectation, right? And we're looking at the video and I go, wait, was that Matt? Oh, I'm like, oh my God, they're actually doing it. They're doing it. They are showing the Series X here. I couldn't believe that you actually did that. But like you just said, Danny, bringing up Hellblade, mm-hmm. I wanted to lean in a Game Pass on that. So you show Hellblade 2 during there. I'd never played Hellblade. Never played it. Heard of it.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Always heard, hey, you got to play Hellblade. Yeah, I'll get to it whenever. You show that instantly piqued my interest. I go, wait a minute. Hellblade's on Game Pass, isn't it? So sure enough, I go on my PC and I look, Hellblade, Game Pass, mm-hmm. PC.
Yeah.
Downloaded it. Phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal playing that game. And I've been kicking myself going, well, why did I wait so long to actually play this game? But it just leads me into wanting to talk a little more in depth about Game Pass, because you obviously announced this a few years ago.
Yeah.
At E3 last year, you've upgraded it now to Game Pass Ultimate with the PC. And it really seems to just be the actual DNA of where you're headed next generation by using Game Pass to not only obviously create the subscription service so that gamers, you know, hey, we spend $10 a month, $15 a month, and we have access to all the Xbox games, but not to mention all the third-party things that you're bringing in. You're obviously, you have stuff on PC and you have xCloud, which is going to integrate into this as well. So again, I know I'm super long-winded when I say these things, but just where did that genesis start with Game Pass, where you decided, hey, let's do this subscription service with games, and how can we expect it to grow as we move forward?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of back to that similar time, actually even a little bit earlier than that showcase event. You know, we've been talking about how do we bring more games to more people. And I'd also say, as somebody, you know, some will say I've been in the industry for too long, but that's been in the industry for a while, that I don't think it's incredibly healthy the way you see the decay in retail today, where, I mean, you know how it is. Gamers like buzz. They like what's hot right now.
Right.
And a game will come out, and so many people flip a bid on a game positively or negatively, really in like the first day or two and whether it's out. And I think people will miss some things. And what happens in that kind of stack of shame or things that they aren't playing or that they even didn't buy is they're not going to go back and buy last year's game because they feel like they missed the buzz time around that game and they're going to use their new dollars for something that shipped more frequently. And it's just, I think it's the nature of entertainment. And when I look at games and how much people are spending, how much studios and publishers are spending to develop games, we need to extend the window of when these games are viable, when they have large player bases, just to like for the health of what our industry needs. Games need to find players. And so Game Pass and just subscriptions in general was a way for people to discover games that maybe they missed when it came out. So your Hellblade story is exactly what we're seeing in the service, that games that were incredibly popular or maybe not incredibly popular, but critically acclaimed, people said, oh, I should go play that, but maybe their new favorite game shipped right next to that game and they missed it or they skipped it. Game Pass gives the ability for these games to have a longer window when people are willing to go try them, because once you're a subscriber, it feels like the next click to download the next game is free. So every game that's in the service is something that you could be playing tonight. And I love that. And the thing that we're seeing in the service is people inside of Game Pass play significantly more games. They buy more games than they were before they were Game Pass subscribers. And the subscriber numbers just continue to grow. And the third parties are finding players that would have never played their games if they were solely relying on retail as the only way for people to find their games. Now, I say our goal is not to get I love the fact that games are for sale and people can go buy them. We have no goal. There's no slide deck anywhere that says, hey, we want to turn everybody into a subscriber and nobody should buy. That's why sometimes when people use like the Netflix of games, I bristle a little bit, because Netflix doesn't sell the content that's in Netflix. For us, if people want to go buy their games, we think that's a really healthy part of the industry. If there's games that you're not going to go buy and you want to subscribe to get access to them, we see that as a strong part of Game Pass. And obviously to grow the service, we're putting our first party games in day and date. And we've seen incredible growth in the time, both on PC and on console. And it's been cool. And as you said, xCloud is the next logical leap for that.
Now, I remember right before the Game Awards, you tweeted that you have the Xbox Series X at home, and that's going to be your primary console, right? Yeah. Why is it is your primary console instead of, like, you know, having Xbox One X and or S?
I mean, first and foremost, it's testing it, right? We have a take-home program. That's what it's called inside. We get to take the box home. We have a little shield that we put on. I think there's been leaked pictures of it before. It kind of looks like a zebra. So that if somebody comes in, I think it draws more attention looking like that than it would if you didn't have it on. But this is another story. You know, I'm trying it and it's in development. Sometimes it reboots. Not all the games today are completely compatible. Like, we're working through our list of approved games on it. The list, you can see what I'm playing. So you can see what's in there's tons of games that work. The first thing I went back and did is started playing some 360 games. I wanted to see how back compat, if you think about it that way, is working. Playing Xbox One games on it, seeing how the UI flow. It's obviously quite a bit faster than the Xbox One X. And even sometimes when things run a little bit faster, there's little UI things that you just need to be aware of. I'm relative to the Xbox One, the first code name for that was Durango. When we launched Durango back in the original days, like, we are so far ahead in terms of when we have take home and this thing being in home. That's the reason I tweeted out, because the team has just done such incredible work to get us into a position where this far ahead of launch, we're actually at home and I can use it as a primary console. I was just really proud of the team. But it's really about testing and learning the experience, and we're getting more and more games in the approved list all the time. And when I'm online playing with my friends and other people who jump online, I'm on the Series X. And if I load into my Destiny Strike a little faster than you do, that's maybe my box.
That's good. Paris, go ahead, man.
Yeah, well, you mentioned Destiny. So I'm a huge Destiny guy. It's just the game I've been playing since the day that it came out. And I just want to comment really quick. I love seeing you with Pete Parsons when you guys did the stream a few months ago, I believe that was.
Thanks.
Playing Destiny. So I have a question about VR, but I want to say this really quick about Destiny.
We'll stay on Destiny.
Yeah, I know, right? So I just want to say really quick with Destiny, how are you feeling about the game right now? How are you enjoying it? You like the new approach they're doing?
I think they're learning, Luke and the guys over there. I mean, I'm a big Bungie fan and a big Destiny fan. Anybody who looks at my play hours can kind of see that. So I'd say at the root of it, you know, they have control down in terms of FPS control on a controller. It's, you know, they're one of the tops in first person shooter control.
Yes.
So it just feels so good. The sounds of the weapons are awesome. So, like, from a visceral experience, I love the experience. I love the grind. I can see them kind of trying some new things and learning some new things with Shadowkeep and where they continue to go. I give them my feedback. But at the root, I'm a big Destiny fan. And I just think it's one of the great franchises that was born in this last generation. And it's cool to see them invest. And not to piggyback back on our previous discussion, but, you know, I think a year from now, Destiny is going to exist. And people will be playing D2 and I'll still be grinding my light level. And when we start thinking about people playing those games across generation, it kind of pushes right into that exclusivity point that you had around, do we want to create like a D2 Prime that doesn't work with the
exactly.
millions of players that are playing now? Or do we want to give developers a way to get the full use out of Series X, which I know they will, and still support the broadest number of players that can go play their games, not to kind of cherry pick that to kind of bring back. But you see more and more games that today want to engage the largest number of players they can. And, you know, that's been just such a central part of our strategy of how do we go enable that.
Well, just to speak on that game specifically, and then I have to talk about this VR thing. I have to mention this, but crossplay coming to Destiny was probably the best thing that ever happened to it. And just overall in gaming, we've seen it with Call of Duty and just even inside the Xbox ecosystem with something like Sea of Thieves, being able to play with my friends, or Gears 5 on PC or on the console is fantastic. It just brings more people together, which I love. Now, VR, I have to bring this up. So you obviously had the comments during XO19. About VR, caused a little bit of a ruckus. And I know Ryan McCaffrey tweeted about it. And then I replied to Ryan McCaffrey. And then you replied to me. And what came out of that was you played Half-Life Alyx. Not that I'm asking you to spoil anything about that experience. But it just brings back the point. And I hope you can elaborate on this a little bit. The reason I said what I said to you at the time is I'm not expecting – Xbox day one launch of the Series X to embrace VR. And I can even understand that today people aren't necessarily embracing VR. My philosophy, and I know other people think this way as well, I'm like, I'm not investing in VR until I see VR 2.0. And I guess the point that I'm making is I look at a game like Half-Life Alyx, I look at Valve Index. To me, this starts seeming like we're getting into that 2.0 phase. So when you kind of shut the door in VR, I was surprised. I was like, wow, that's shocking that he would say that. So I guess my question to you is, and like I even said on Twitter, is I just hope the door is open for VR. Not that it has to happen in 2020 or 2021, but as more adoptions, as we get more Half-Life Alyxes of the world, at least have the door open to eventually, you know, explore VR on an Xbox platform.
Yeah. And I think I kind of said this on Twitter, and, you know, I'm not defending myself at XO. I probably overstated, and I wasn't trying to take any kind of, for people who love VR and the experiences that are being built, no disrespect to any of the teams there. You know, Ryan Payton, a good friend of mine, he's getting ready to ship Iron Man VR. And, you know, it's like, there's a lot of people I know that are working on some good VR titles, great VR titles, and I'm not trying to not be supportive of that, to use a double negative. But my main point was I wanted to be clear with our customers on where our focus was, so that if somebody was waiting for us to bring out a VR headset for Series X at the launch or something, I was just trying to, like, we're not going to do that. And I understand certain people would want that. We have to focus our efforts on the things that we're doing right now. And the most precious resource that we have is the team and their ability. And I just have to focus, like, I have to focus on the things that we're doing right now. And VR is not just as simple as plugging a headset in. You have to redo the dash. Like, there's a bunch of work that goes into it. And the teams at Valve, the teams at Sony, the teams at Oculus that are doing that work, they know the completeness and what it means to support that platform. Yeah. Obviously, just quickly, obviously, VR is big on Windows today. We are the Windows company. We're never going to close our eyes to where things are going. So I'm not trying to say, you know, I don't hope it goes away. I hope it gets bigger. I hope it's something that's just so important that it'd be no brainer for us to go support it. My main point in that statement wasn't to shade anybody who's working on VR or anything, but really just about the stuff that we're focused on right now. And that's not part of the equation right now.
All right. So I have one more last question here. This is super important to me because back then I remember, I'm going to go way back to the original Xbox. There was this game called True Fantasy Live Online.
Yeah.
I was super excited about that game because I'm a huge fan of Phantasy Star Online. And yeah. I was super excited when you guys announced and showed the trailer about part two at E3.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was super curious why that game was canceled. Like, was there anything that happened? Like, I know it probably was a hard decision for you guys and probably also for Level 5 to just cancel it out of nowhere, you know, but I was disappointed, man. And I've been having that question for years. And I always wanted to ask that question.
You have no idea how much we anticipated that game back then. Oh, man.
So for TFLO, first, I wasn't that close to it at the time because I wasn't running all of First Party. I was running one studio. I think I don't have a great answer other than we work on certain things. This is what I heard from, like, sitting beside it, that the game wasn't really coming together. And there's obviously been other examples of that. And both of us just decided, hey, for the amount that you'd have to go invest on such an, you know, a thing that it was kind of unclear what the success date or if it was really going to come together the right way, that I think it was kind of a mutual decision. But I wasn't directly involved with it. But I do want to talk about PSO real quick, and I know I'm going to drag a little bit later, but hopefully that's okay.
Yeah,
because
take all the time you need.
You know, I was over in Japan, and one of the things I got to do was sit down with Sega and talk to the PSO team and look at all the progress that they've been making. I know the beta is getting ready to go on, what is it?
This weekend. I'm a huge fan.
7th. Yeah.
Yes.
And I was just trying to figure out days of the week. And it was so cool to sit with the team, and literally I went through all the functions. I went through all the different art. We got to play. It is PSO. So you can see it. You can see the passion in that team. And them really investing in that franchise. I'm going to say to bring it back, and some people probably won't love that I say that, but when I think of outside of Japan and it being something that a lot of us remember, I just love the amount of commitment that Sega has right now to that game. Clearly there's work to be done, and that's why they're doing their open beta, their closed beta this weekend, mm-hmm. To get more people in, the people they've invited and the people have been accepted. But it was just awesome to sit with the team, and I wanted to thank them and to sit down. I mean, the trip was awesome. I got to play a lot of games, and that was definitely a highlight, getting to see all the commitment that they have to that franchise. And I don't know that it'll scratch your TFLO itch, but I'll say at least for the PSO fans out there, it sounds like the team's trying to do something great, which is
that's
cool.
That's good. No, the first game completely changed my life, let me tell you, man. So, no, but I just want to say, Phil, you know, thank you so much.
Can I interrupt real quick? I know you have to go, Phil. I know you have to go, but just if we get one more minute of your time.
Yeah, go for it.
Because you mentioned Japan.
Well, let me do one thing first, and then you can go. Yeah. Like, I just really, 1,000 episodes is a huge accomplishment. You guys have been doing this for a long time. And the thing I'll say, when we were talking about doing this, the thing that I heard over and over, just so you hear it from me and the way the team talks about how you guys show up, is that you're mm-hmm. fair. And that doesn't mean that you always are like candy coating stuff and whether we do stuff well or not. No, but I'm serious.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And it was really cool. And you guys have earned that reputation of being fair. And I can think of nothing more in the world of console wars and everybody wants to be against something else and not for something. The fact that the teams around here talk about you guys as a great source of knowledge and opinion about gaming and also a fair source. I just thought you guys, like, kudos to that. Congrats on the 1,000 and congrats on the reputation you've built, because it's really awesome.
Wow. Thanks a lot, man. Means a lot. Means a lot.
No, it absolutely does. And mm-hmm. you just said it best. I mean, I view it as I'm critical of the things that I love, right? Because I'm not talking to you right now if it wasn't for Xbox 15 years ago and just the great community that was built back then. And hey, it's a roller coaster. Times are great, times are bad, but I've always appreciated your honesty when it comes to this stuff and admitting when you make a mistake. And hey, we're going to do our best to try and fix it. Now, like I said, I know we're stealing extra time. And I just, since you brought up the Japan thing,
yeah.
When I think about games like Blue Dragon, I think about games like Lost Legacy, and you obviously
Lost
were just
Lost Odyssey.
Did I say Legacy? See,
I'm yes.
flummoxed. Lost Odyssey, excuse me. But the presence in Japan, I mean, this has been an ongoing conversation with Xbox over the years, is, you know, building a presence in Japan. And then I just think with all the studio acquisitions that you've been doing the past few years, which has been great, by the way, Outer Worlds is a fantastic game. I love it. But, you know, are we going to see that Japanese presence come in-house to the Xbox family?
Yeah, let me start, and I'll try to do it quick because I know we're over time. But yeah. I'm going to start with, not to make it about me, but I'll just say when I got into this job, the thing I was seeing were third parties skipping Xbox One and not even shipping on the platform. And to be fair, I think we'll see, you know, there'll still always there. I don't know about always. There will still be examples of that, and every one of them causes me pain. But the number one thing I wanted to do when I started in this role was to get back on the ground a couple times a year, playing with the studio heads, playing their games, and just seeing, making them know that I had a commitment to their global success. And I think one of the outputs of that first was just the number of Japanese published games that we were able to show in E3. Mm-hmm. And I've been really proud of the way that we built a partnership with almost all of the publishers there. And had really great showings on our E3 stage. And yes, those games are shipping on all platforms. But the fact that games that had never been on our stage were on our stage, then we started seeing games that had never been on our platform, not only coming to the platform, but being highlighted on our stage. And that's the journey that I started on. When I'm over there, I'll tell you the number one piece of feedback I get from the studio heads, who, and I've been around for a long time, I know a lot of them incredibly well, is to say the people in our studios love working with you guys. They just wish they saw more Xboxes in the stores around here. And because you want to be working on a game and have the platform it's going to be on kind of be seen in your home country. You want your friends to be able to play it and all of this. So our market in Japan for our Xbox is important to us. Obviously, Sony, Nintendo, both strong Japanese companies have done a great job. I don't know that we're winning in Japan anytime soon. But the position that we have in Japan today from a platform isn't acceptable to me. And we're going to do a much better time, a much better job with this next upcoming launch of not waiting 10 months to launch in Japan like we did last time. We're going to make sure that our number and services like Game Pass and xCloud and stuff are there so people have access to it. And I think what you're asking about is, could we have more homegrown first-party content that's developed there? And I'll just say I think we can. And I'm not announcing anything, but you know, I think the Japanese market is specifically important because of the creative community there, because of the gamer community there, and I want Xbox to mean more there than it does today, and that means working across a bunch of different fronts to make that possible, and it takes time. And like I said, I'm still going to see some things come get announced that are on our platform, and I cringe every time that happens. But I'll say relative to 4 or 5 years ago, I feel good about our progress. And I definitely know that we're in this for the long run in that market, in all the markets. And we want to have, just to continue to increase the relevance and the importance of Xbox to people.
Well, Phil, I just want to say one more time, man, thank you so much, man, for taking your time, man, to be on the show, man. This means a lot to me because, you know, it's going to be 15 years now, later this month, and 1,000 episodes. I think this was like a perfect way to start now. 1,000 and up, you know.
There you go,
you, man. So yeah. Thanks a lot, man.
Here's to the next 1,000.
Yes, for sure.
Okay.
All right,
talk
man.
To you later.
Take care, man. Right,
thank you.
Bye.
Thanks.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
All right, so we're back here. Once again, thank you to Phil. Thank you to the whole Xbox team for just giving us the opportunity, man. Amazing, amazing time. I had a great, great time talking to Phil, man. And it was just an awesome conversation. You know, we were just talking about games. We had questions that was just, we were just curious for a very long time, you know, about the Xbox Series X and everything, man. So, Paris, what you thought about the whole interview overall, man, for you? Because you asked a lot of questions too.
Well, again, now that people have heard it, I know I was a little long-winded in a few of the questions, but I knew our time was limited with Phil, and he obviously was very generous to give us a few extra minutes at the end. But I just wanted to make sure I got those questions in. I was like, if anything that we're going to talk about, it was like, I want to make sure that he at least addressed the exclusivity deal with the Series X. He talked about VR. You know, he was pretty candid on Game Pass. And then obviously at the end with Japan, I think these are all things that people will want to hear about and understand. And you look, I got to talk to Phil for 3 hours. All the questions I really had, but I tried to make sure, you know, at least ask those. So again, we'll get the feedback, but I hope people really enjoyed it. I mean, he's a great person to talk to.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the most important thing, Paris, that I think this is super important for us to talk about, because, and look, we had no idea what he was going to say. Let's keep it real. We had our questions.
Yeah, we had no idea.
The only thing that we told Xbox, like, look, we're not going to ask rumors, because I think that's unfair. And to me, it's like very unprofessional, you know, but two things that really surprised me the most. And the first one is the endorsement of like us just being fair. Because I think it's super important, you know, as a fan of just games in general, we're always going to give our feedback, good and bad, right? But it's not what you say, it's how you say it. And we've been like that since day one. So seeing the tweets from people, I'm saying, oh, but these guys are not fair. Why are they getting this interview and everything, man? Like, the man himself, he said it. You guys are fair. That's the one thing that everybody from his team was saying about us too, man. You know, I think that was a very important part of the show, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I truly appreciated him saying that, because we did not expect that at all, that he would even address something like that. So to hear it from, you know, the executive vice president of gaming at Microsoft to say something like that was truly appreciated. Mm-hmm. And I think this has always been my mantra that, you know, If I criticize, I'm criticizing it for a reason, but I'm trying to do it in a respectful way. And and it's good to know that the fine folks over at Microsoft feel the same way, that, hey, we know what we've done the past 7 years has not been perfect. And we know that we're open to criticism, but they're hearing that criticism and they welcome the criticism because it helps them get better. If you look at where Microsoft is going, if you look at where Xbox is headed into this next generation, we don't get Game Pass, xCloud, Play Anywhere. We don't get any of these things. You don't get an Xbox One X. You don't get this Series X. You don't get them with this full backwards compatibility plan to the original Xbox without feedback. you don't get it, you know? So that's how I look at it. So I honestly, and I've said this for the past few years, I'm excited about the future of Xbox, where they're headed. So, you know, and it's good to hear that, you know, Phil, like, I just love how candid he was about certain things.
Very candid.
He was very, very candid about, like him seeing Japanese games that he really wish he could have on the Xbox platform go somewhere else. They make him cringe because he understands that. Because, again, he's one of us. He may be an executive vice president, but he plays games just like us, which is why I had to sneak the Destiny question in there. But, you know, he likes to play games just like we do. He's passionate just like we are. So, again, I just thank him for coming on. I thought it was fantastic conversation with him. And, you know, hey, I would have loved to have had an hour, 2 hours to be able to talk, because there's still so many other questions that we could have asked.
Yeah, Paris, I totally agree with that. And I think, man, just overall, the interview was fantastic, man. I had a great time just talking to Phil, and it was cool getting help from most of the Xbox team setting everything up. So, all right, the listener out there, if you enjoyed this interview with Phil Spencer here on episode 1000, please let us know. Send us an email, fanmail@gamertagradio.com. Give us a call, 76-2737-GTR. That's 76-2737-GTR. Also, you could go to speakpipe.com/gamertagradio, and you could post your question there, recorded, and we'll play on a podcast on a future episode of GTR. Shout out to 368. They gave me a venue for me to record over here, man. So shout out to them. And make sure to check them out. Follow them on Twitter, 368. Or go, if you live here locally in New York, go to 368 and Broadway, and you will find the venue. Really cool spot. Great for content creators, man. So, but yeah, thanks once again to Phil, Xbox, everybody listening to this episode. Paris, thank you for also taking your time, man, from your crazy busy schedule at home. You know what I'm saying? And it was fun, man. This was like historic. I think I will never forget this, man, this moment. Never, never forget it, man. We did it, man. We finally did it, man. So everybody, thank you for listening. Head over to gamertagradio.com, post your comments and feedback. Also listen to our past episodes, share it. If this is your first time listening to this, go right now, go to any podcast app and just search for Gamertag Radio and just subscribe and share it. It will help us out, man. So until next time, we're out. Thank you for listening to our 1,000th episode of GTR. Until next time, peace.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.